Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Nick Augustine, and I'm here with attorney Joseph Roble from Joseph Roble Limited, the Chicago bankruptcy law firm. This is the Chicago Bankruptcy Update, featuring information, news, and updates in bankruptcy law. Financial troubles are stressful, and bankruptcy can be a solution for you. If you are considering filing for a bankruptcy, Joseph Roble will courteously and professionally review your finances, answer all your questions, and provide the information you need to allow you to decide for yourself if bankruptcy makes sense, has value, and is the best way to provide relief from your financial woes. For a library of information about bankruptcy and from the Chicago Bankruptcy Law Firm of Joseph Roble Limited, please visit the website ChicagoBankruptcy.com. Today, this is the July 2016 Chicago Bankruptcy Question and Answer Podcast with Joseph Roble. Some of the topics we'll cover on our 30-minute show today. 1. Must all my debts be included in the bankruptcy filing? 2. What are some of the dangers of filing for bankruptcy without an attorney? And 3. My ex-husband wants to file for bankruptcy. Am I going to be stuck with the debt? Another one, can I keep my house if I file for bankruptcy protection? And one more common thing we're hearing, I'm newly married, want to file for bankruptcy and not include my wife. Very interesting topics here. These are all real questions from real people, and we give them the best answers given the information. Again, I'm here with Joseph Roble, and he's been a practicing attorney since 1973 and has experience in a wide variety of legal matters relating to individuals and families. He presently concentrates his practice in consumer bankruptcy. Roble helps clients get out of debt and get a fresh financial start. He's an active volunteer member of the Silver Bar Associations and on the bankruptcy panel of the Pro Bono Program for the Chicago Volunteer Legal Services. Roble earned his BA from psychology from Northwestern University, and in 1973 he earned a JD from the DePaul University Law School in Chicago. He also served for the U.S. Army Reserve 363rd Civil Affairs Unit. By way of short disclaimer, the information we talk about on this program is general information, and this advice shared on this show does not constitute legal advice, and listening to the show does not give rise to an attorney-client relationship. If you do have questions, you should call the bankruptcy law firm of Joseph Roble Limited, make an appointment to speak to an attorney by dialing area code 312-781-0996. Finally, all callers are confidential and rights to this broadcast are reserved. It's time to say good morning to attorney Joseph Roble.
Nick, good morning to you. Hope everything's going well with
Joe. Everything is going well, and I hope that everything is going well with everybody out there and during the heated political season and topics that come around, such as the economy. And while there are still a lot of people who are doing a lot better than they are from years past, there are still people who hit those financial roadblocks and emergencies that pop up. You know, when we talk about bankruptcy, it could be anything from someone losing a job to an auto accident, someone can't work and the bills pile up, creditors are calling off, phones ringing off the hook. Sometimes people just need to take a step back and reevaluate and see if they can get a fresh start over. So that's what we're talking about today. And if you're ready for our first question, I'll just dive right in.
Go ahead. Shoot.
All right. The first person wants to know, must all the debts be included in the bankruptcy? They say, well, I want to file a Chapter 13 reorganization to stop the sale of my house through foreclosure. I don't want to include my credit cards and my auto loan. I want to get rid of those. I was told that I have to include all of my debt, so was I given proper information? How does this work?
The short answer is yes. The longer answer, as with many things in the law, has some little odds and ends to it. So when the word inclusion or included is referenced to, basically that means this. The bankruptcy petition that's filed, whether it's a Chapter 7 where you wipe out debts or a Chapter 13 where you set up a payment plan, the petition itself has many different aspects, different parts to it, different sections, and an obvious section is who are the creditors. Every debt where there is a balance due is listed, so included in the petition. They're not all treated the same. In a Chapter 13 for this particular questioner who is looking to stop a foreclosure, they simply want to take that past due mortgage and repay it over a period of years through their Chapter 13, stop the foreclosure, keep their house. That's all well and good. But when there are credit cards, the credit cards are listed in the petition and they must be included in the plan payments. They can't be paid directly anymore. When there is an auto loan, as in this case, usually the cheapest way to handle that is to pay that card directly. The finance company that holds the loan on the vehicle will know there's a bankruptcy. The plan will state that those payments will continue to be made directly by the debtor to the creditor. The trustee won't pay them. There are circumstances where it may make more sense to pay the car through the plan. Those are usually where the car payments are behind and it's hard to catch up, or where the car loan is old enough where you can, what's called, cram down the loan, pay less than what you owe, and knock off some of that debt. Student loans, they're listed in the bankruptcy petition. Those can be included in the bankruptcy. They can be paid directly. The client's circumstance will dictate what is the best procedure for them.
I have a question, Joe. Why is it that the car can be paid directly, but the credit cards cannot?
As secured loans can be paid directly. For example, the mortgage that's past due, that's going to go in the plan. The regular mortgage payments that will start after filing can also go in the plan, but anything that goes in the plan, you pay a small percentage for trustees' administrative expenses. So we'll usually tell the client, make your regular mortgage payments directly yourself. Secured creditors can be paid directly.
Good to know. All right, well, we hope that answers that individual's question and they can move forward with that information. All right, our next one, college transcripts are being withheld. This individual just said they had a bankruptcy that was discharged this last May. It was a Chapter 7 bankruptcy. The individual said they included all of their student loans and contacted the school. The school said they owed $3,000 for tuition and that student loans did not were not part of the bankruptcy. So can I still get my transcripts? It says it was a no-asset case. Can I take my discharge papers to the register? Or maybe they'll give me my transcript. I need it for work. Any ideas? The person says, school says they owe them $3,000.
All right. The process works like this. Once the bankruptcy is filed, holding back a transcript by the school violates the automatic stay. The automatic stay is the court order that's entered on the day the bankruptcy is filed that tells all creditors that there now is a bankruptcy that all collection activity must stop. Collection activity would be telephone calls, harassment letters, collection letters, starting a lawsuit, continuing a lawsuit. Withholding a transcript would be considered a collection activity. It violates the automatic stay that protects the debtor against the creditors, because what the school is doing is saying, hey, I've got this transcript. You're not paying me. I'm not giving it to you. Well, they can't do that once the bankruptcy is filed. Now, if we're talking about just student loans aren't discharged in 3.5 to 4 months after the filing date. The bankruptcy is concluded. The debtor gets a written court order called a discharge. That discharge tells the creditors and, of course, the debtor that the debts are gone, the legal obligation to pay is gone. student loan will not be included. Once that discharge is entered, there's no longer an automatic stay. There's no prohibition on collection, which means the school can now withhold a transcript. So if we are dealing just with student loans and a Chapter 7, the debtor needs to do something while the bankruptcy is open to get that transcript. And the debtor's attorney can bring an action in bankruptcy court to release the transcript to get the attorney's extra attorney's fees paid for bringing this action, because the school is improperly withholding the transcript, and possibly a fine or damages, depending on how punitive things are. If there is also tuition, if we're dealing just with tuition, then tuition is discharged and the debtor can seek to get that transcript through the bankruptcy either while it's open or even after it's closed. I think I made that pretty clear, but can be a little bit complicated.
Well, it's definitely a note to people when you graduate, get that transcript right away before, you know, and not that you'd anticipate having a problem with student loans, but, you know, it doesn't really speak too well for alumni relations. I bet this person doesn't get money when the school calls and asks for some. But interesting, though, that they can hold you over a barrel before or after, but not during the bankruptcy. So I guess it's on the checklist of things to do while you're in bankruptcy. There you go. Make sure you get your copies of all your transcripts. All right, best of luck to this person. Our next person wants to know if they can get it all done by themselves without hiring a lawyer. So we're talking here about the dangers of filing bankruptcy without an attorney. This person says, I filed for bankruptcy in March of this year. They sent me a letter saying that I filed too soon. My bankruptcy will not be discharged. So my question is, do I wait to refile, or will it be discharged when the 8 years expire? Sounds like they had a previous bankruptcy then.
Yeah. Well, when they use the word they, it's going to be a notice by the Office of the U.S. Trustee, probably a motion in bankruptcy court to dismiss their case. So a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, people are allowed to file more than once or twice in their life. It's unfortunate that people have to do it once, and of course, even a second time, it does happen. I've seen it. I've seen it more often than you would think. Things happen to all of us in life. The mistake this person made was to be their own attorney, because had they gone to an experienced attorney, the attorney would have looked up the fact that there was a prior bankruptcy and would have seen that it has not been 8 years yet, and would have told the client, you wait, when the 8 years are up, file Chapter 7. Or if there was a need to file, let's say there's a garnishment to stop, if they qualified, they could have filed a Chapter 13, set up a payment plan. So again, as we've seen many times with these questions, trying to save money by not having an experienced attorney can oftentimes be detrimental. This particular client is now going to have two bankruptcies on their credit report within a short period of time, because this one that's dismissed will show filed and dismissed, and that cannot help them with their credit score.
Yikes. The dangers of doing it yourself. You know, it's like doing your own electrical wiring at your house. You know, you kind of hope that you don't have a fire, but just make sure you have insurance for that and everything else. There was a program, I think, someone told me about, where this man, some country somewhere, I want to say New Zealand or Australia or somewhere far away, the guy lived out on his own and did his own dentistry somehow. And, you know, hey, if you can learn everything like that, I mean, go for it. But it takes a while, especially knowing those the unknown unknowns, as we like to call them. You know, you can study and kind of like they say, coming right out of law school, you know, they don't know when the other side's putting the wool over their you know, they just don't, you know, no experience. There's just no excuse for not, you know, nothing else like experience out there. So
reminds
again,
me of those Holiday Inn commercials where, oh, are you a surgeon? No, but I stayed at a Holiday Inn.
Yeah, right, exactly. All right. Well, before our halfway break, we've got one more question that involves something that's going to be a particularly increasing question and issue as our baby boomer population continues growing older. We look at issues with elderly folks, and sometimes the best laid plans and savings, you know, get hit sideways by all the things that happen in the world and our economic troubles that we've had in the last decade. So it happens too frequently that we have elderly folks out there who don't have any assets. And they're concerned when collectors and creditors are calling them on the phone, and who knows what they're saying. Anyways, this one individual wants to know, should my mom file for bankruptcy? And if so, can I help her along with this process? Says, I already have a power of attorney agreement. My 84-year-old mother lives in Florida. She has $24,000 worth of credit card debt. She's on Social Security and has a small pension. She has no assets other than her home, which she already has a reverse mortgage on, and more is owed than it's worth. She is competent, but I do all her bills for her, as well as her meds, etc. She gets easily confused and has been having memory issues recently. I reside right with her, and I lost my job some years back, but is mostly unemployed with very little income coming in. The debt has accumulated over some years, this credit card debt. It's just no longer sustainable, particularly with combined with increased prescription costs. Says, I'm concerned if she has to be by herself in the bankruptcy process, how much stress that might put her through. She already has a pacemaker and other heart conditions which she's being treated for. So again, adult child wants to know what they can do to help the 84-year-old mother with these issues, including all this reverse mortgage on the house that we see advertised all too often. I just kind of cringe, but I don't know. What do you think, Joe?
Okay, so let's separate this question and let's take out her mental condition. She's 84. She has easily gets confused and has memory issues. Let's forget about this for a minute. This particular client is in a situation that we call judgment proof. We've mentioned this on the phone before. What that means is that the creditor has really no way of collecting against this debtor. She's unemployed. I assume there's little or no money in bank accounts. And if she never paid the credit cards for the rest of her life, whether it's 1 year or another 20 years, and she gets sued, they have no way of collecting. In this case, with a reverse mortgage, she's never going to get any. She can't sell the house if she owes more than what it's worth. So if there's a lawsuit against her, they put a lien against the property, makes no difference. She can decide, I'm not going to file a bankruptcy. I don't have money for lawyer's fees. I don't want to deal with the bankruptcy and having to go meet with the trustee. I'm just not going to do it, knowing that nothing will happen to her. She could also decide that she wants to do the bankruptcy because she doesn't want to deal with future harassment by creditors. And when I meet with clients in this situation, regardless of their age, if they're in a judgment-proof situation, meaning there's no assets that can be taken by a creditor, they don't have wages to garnish, I will give them that advice and let them make their own decision. Many, many people decide to file anyway. They're appreciative of being told of what their options are. And for most of them, it's the telephone calls drive them crazy. The letters make them nervous. The creditors make them nervous. They don't want to appear in court. And the stress of the bankruptcy is really quite small. Once that petition is filed, there's really not much that the debtor has to do except one meeting with a bankruptcy trustee, no court appearance, There's not really that much involvement. Now, we have a secondary issue here. We have a woman who may not be 100% competent to sign a petition and understand what's going on. I don't know that from this, but I've seen that before. And the daughter in this case, if she and her mom, the prospective debtor, decide that bankruptcy is the best thing for them to do, the daughter may need to have herself appointed through the probate court as the guardian for the mom so that the daughter can complete the petition, sign it for her mom with due to the fact that the mom is not competent to do so. That's additional cost for the daughter. It's a little bit of a hassle, but in the long run, it just may be worth doing for them.
Just a couple of questions. First, the house, when we talk about the house where she has this reverse mortgage, if the house had been just owned outright and was an asset that was unencumbered, is there more chance that for $25,000 amounts in credit cards, and again, we don't know how many credit cards these are, what's the likelihood that someone will go and get a judgment and try to foreclose on the house?
Foreclosing against the house for a judgment like that in most states is very difficult. It would be a reason, assuming the house is paid for, it would be a reason to file a bankruptcy because you can avoid having the judgment placed as a lien against the house, and that judgment lien will garner interest every year. So when the house is sold in the future, either by the debtor or by family, they're going to have to pay that plus interest. However, with a house that's paid for, you may not be able to do a Chapter 7 depending on the state that you live in. So in Illinois, your homestead exemption is $15,000, meaning if your house is worth less than, let's say, $25,000, you could file Chapter 7. You're not going to see that very much. Other states have much higher exemptions. New Hampshire, for an individual, has a $100,000 exemption. So depending on where this client lives, assuming a house was paid for, would help determine whether they could keep it in a Chapter 7. And then taking that scenario further, if they decided to do a bankruptcy with a paid-for house and they don't fit within the exemptions, they may need to file a Chapter 13 and set up a payment plan. So as we see so many times, a slight change in the factual situation leads to a number of different optional paths to take for the particular debtor.
It is, you know, and a lot of times when we talk about the phone calls from the creditors and collectors, the letters and all the threats and the idea of having them, I guess maybe people think that having that bankruptcy notice go to all those creditors will just infuriate them and make them mad, but, you know, that's nothing, not for them to be angry about it. You know, the automatic stay is the automatic stay. And I guess with the decision of all this, it's probably like going to the doctor where people are afraid of needles, and the anticipation is worse than the thing itself, certainly. You know, and it's a point that you bring up, Joe, when you change one or two, you know, minor scenario facts in the scenario, it can really change the whole outlook here. So, again, that's why we do these programs, because if you talk to someone, your friend or neighbor, who did a bankruptcy in years past, unless your situation is exactly the same as theirs, you don't know that what happened to them is what you're going to be working with yourself. The present bankruptcy laws, they're complicated. The procedures involved and the documentation that can be required can be a little overwhelming to people trying to learn about how they can do this, especially when they're not familiar with the law. Well, Joseph Robel has over 40 years' experience representing clients in consumer bankruptcy, and the value of that experience is ensuring that your financial situation will be properly analyzed. Joseph Robel and his staff understand you might be anxious about the financial problems, are tired by the harassment of creditors that are uncertain as to whether filing for bankruptcy is really what you need. Well, if bankruptcy will help your financial situation, you'll be properly advised for which Chapter 7 or 13 you may qualify. And at Joseph Robo Limited, the entire procedure from beginning to end will be clearly explained in a What to Do Next letter that you'll receive at or after your initial consultation that's free. And also that'll guide you through the entire process from start until finish. Of course, if you don't need to file for bankruptcy, they'll tell you that. Joseph Robo Limited is not going to put you into a bankruptcy simply to earn a fee. Joseph Robo Limited is a small law firm of attorneys and staff experienced in consumer bankruptcy. They are not a big bankruptcy law factory, and you won't get lost in their office. You will be treated as a human being with courtesy, dignity, and respect. Again, the mission at Joseph Robo Limited is to have you take control over your finances through proper use of the bankruptcy laws. Joseph Robo Limited has offices conveniently located in the Chicago Loop, Chicago Rosemont, and in the suburbs of Burr Ridge, Deerfield, Gurnee, Naperville, Orland Park, Schaumburg, Skokie, St. Charles, and Westchester. So they can represent Illinois clients all over Cook County and the suburban and collar counties of Will, DuPage, Kane, LaSalle, Kendall, and Lake County. All right, so as we get back to our program, I want to remind people who want to find more information, chicagobankruptcy.com is the website where there's a library of information as well as links to all the social media channels. So we share information frequently, not only just about the bankruptcy process, but about good credit, good financial health, building after bankruptcy, and all sorts of financial success-related items. All right, so another back to our program here, Joe. Another of the frequent things we hear, folks getting married, concerned about bringing debts to the marriage, what happens if they get divorced. People want to answer a lot of these questions ahead of time. Here's an individual who says he's newly married and is considering getting divorced but does not want to include his wife. Says, I'm newly married and I'm considering filing for bankruptcy myself. My unsecured debt is approximately $40,000, and I have an upside-down car loan, which my father co-signed on. I do want to get my debts under control, which is why I'm considering bankruptcy. However, with being a newlywed, I do not know if that will play a factor in my ability to file for bankruptcy. So, is my being a newlywed somehow affect that? And will it be possible to file for bankruptcy as an individual and keep my wife's income and assets out of my bankruptcy? And also, would Chapter 13 be a better option for me than Chapter 7, as I want to keep my car? So, this guy knows what he wants.
And what he wants, he can get. You absolutely have the right to file as an individual. A spouse is not required to join the other spouse in any bankruptcy, whether it's Chapter 7 or Chapter 13. So he can leave her out, not an issue. The petition will show that he is a married person, and if his wife is working, it'll show that she's employed, and the budget is a family budget. Whether he should do a 13, generally with a car that's being financed, if he can qualify for Chapter 7, otherwise, meaning passing the median income test, then there isn't a reason to do a 13. He can just continue to make his car payments. If the car payments are behind or if he can't pass the median income test, then a 13 would be an option for him. But again, wife does not need to join in, and she won't be affected as long as there are no joint debts.
There you go. Maybe save that guy's marriage. So that's a people get married. That's a serious concern. Not everyone comes to marriage. You know, what do you tell someone who says, "Hey, I'm thinking of getting married. I don't even know what my person I'm going to marry. I don't know what their debts are. You know, do I do a financial investigation on them? You know, what would you tell someone?"
I don't think someone's ever come to me to ask me that question prior to a marriage about investigating them, and I think I'm not going to touch that one. I'll leave them to decide on their own what they want to know about their spouse.
There you go. There you go. All right. Well, we have about four questions left, so we can go a couple minutes over. Here's another person who wants to keep their house. They say, if I file for bankruptcy, will I be able to keep my house? I'm recently divorced with two children, 50% custody, and the ex-wife does not want the house. Kids and I want to stay. Wondered if I'd have a chance of saving this house.
So we've all heard, regardless of where we live around the country, of bankruptcy lawyers advertising on TV. File bankruptcy. Get rid of your debt. Keep your house. Well, that's all well and good, but that commercial should say, file bankruptcy. Get rid of your debt. Keep your house, comma, depending on what it's worth. So many people can file Chapter 7, wipe out their debts, keep their home, depending on the value of the house, what it could be sold for presently, and the mortgage balances, and the state in which they live. There are exemptions that provide for how much equity you can have in your house and file a bankruptcy and keep it. Illinois, it's $15,000 a person, $30,000 a married couple. New Hampshire, for example, I used it previously, $100,000 for a single person, $200,000 for a married couple. The choice of what you're going to be doing will depend upon values, mortgage balances, the state in which you live. If your house is worth too much money and you can't keep it in a 7, then the option is, let's look at Chapter 13. What would a payment plan be? Can you afford it? That lets you control your debt and still keep your property.
There you go. All sorts of options. And again, watch those TV ads because they don't always tell you the whole story. Our next question, we have someone who has a creditor who's knocking on the door and wanting to get paid. Says, we are owed money from a contractor. We did work for this contractor. And the contractor is now filing for Chapter 7, and we need advice on how we can proceed. Is there a way that we can recover our money? Are there any steps that we can take to get paid?
If the debtor, the particular contractor, and I can't tell from this whether it's an individual or a corporation, if the individual or the corporation that filed bankruptcy has assets, then this particular creditor should be able to get paid at least something. After the case is filed, there'll be a meeting with the trustee where the debtor has to appear. Creditors can also appear to ask questions. The trustee will determine if the debtor has assets. If there are assets, there will be a notice sent out to all the creditors. It tells them, this particular debtor has assets. If you wish to get paid in this bankruptcy, file a proof of claim. It's a form to fill out listing information about the debt that's filed with the clerk. Then after a period of time, the claims are analyzed, and the trustee will then distribute money to each creditor that filed a claim. What the amount that they get is impossible to say. It could be pennies on the dollar. It could be 50% of the debt. It could be 100%. Depends on the assets. Depends on how big the claim is. It's not a difficult process to do this.
It's worth a shot. Always worth a shot. All right, our next person. We have another marriage situation. Actually, it's a divorce. People got divorced, and the ex-husband did file bankruptcy, and the ex-wife now is worried about this debt. Ex-wife says, I've been separated with my ex-husband for about 4 years. We had a car in both of our names. He filed for bankruptcy without my knowledge. The debt is still on my credit report as debt owed. I don't know what I should do.
Well, he did not have to let her know about his bankruptcy. It was not a legal obligation. It would have been a courteous thing to do, depending on their relationship, which obviously doesn't sound like it was too good. This sounds like a joint debt. Joint debts are not protected in a Chapter 7 bankruptcy. So on this particular debt, she is still obligated to pay and will need to deal with it. Either she's going to have to pay it, or make payment arrangements, or file her own bankruptcy.
So when the discharge would take place, and this gentleman would have discharged his personal liability for the car loan, but the car loan, the lender doesn't care. If someone else is on the hook, they're going to go after her.
Absolutely.
Yep. All right. And our last question is two separate bankruptcies, same family. All right. This person wants to know, can my spouse file for bankruptcy for Chapter 13 in where I am currently in Chapter 13 myself? My husband decided not to file with me. Now he needs to save his car, and he would like to file Chapter 13 as well on his own. Is he allowed to file any chapter of bankruptcy while I am currently in the middle of my own Chapter 13? None of the debt is on my case, or none of his debt is on my bankruptcy case. Separate debt, separate bankruptcies.
Short answer, yes. He can file his own Chapter 13 or Chapter 7, depending on what works best for him. Extending the answer a little bit, one of the things that I will ask clients when they're married, are you looking to file bankruptcy for yourself or jointly? If they tell me just for themselves, I advise them the spouse doesn't have to file, but I ask about the spouse's debts. And sometimes it's advantageous for the parties to do a case together. They save lawyers' fees. They don't have to file two separate cases. But it's not often easy to talk the other spouse into filing. Many people are adamant they don't want to do it, but sometimes things happen and they say to themselves, I should have joined my spouse, and this is one of those situations.
There you go. Well, again, hindsight is 20/20 sometime, but again, for all the people who out there want to save that dime by doing it all on their own, you know, you don't want to get into a situation where you have regrets, where it actually costs you, and you can't get a discharge and all sorts of other things. So, Joe, if people want to get in touch with you and learn more or have questions they want to ask for their friend of a friend or someone, how do they best get a hold of you?
They can call me directly on my cell phone, 312-804-8416. I'll be happy to answer questions, and if circumstances warrant, we'll set an appointment. We have 11 locations in the Chicago area. A lot of information on bankruptcy can be found on the website, chicagobankruptcy.com. If people want to find out if other clients like me or not, we have a lot of reviews on Avvo, AVVO.com.
All right. And again, please remember, people, when you find the links to these broadcasts and podcasts, whether it's you're finding them in LinkedIn or the newsletter, Facebook or social media, Twitter, please hit that like button, share it with other people, because as I always say, you never know who might be someone who might find this information very valuable and helpful. And people don't always tell you that they're having financial stresses of their own. You don't know whether your friend or neighbor may be considering bankruptcy. And if you can help them get the right information and get good help, it's a good service for everyone. So, again, this is Nick Augustine with Joseph Robel. Joe, thank you again for your time, and we will see you in a few weeks.
As always, thank you, Nick.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.